Welcome to the start of the regular season.
Everyone, you often hear an adage around the National
Chiefs,
Football
along with the 15-year long snapper in the National Football League, the best to ever play his position, Kendall Gammon. All right, here we are on the precipice of the season against the Jaguars, but let's go back a week. It's going to set things up in one of the craziest Sundays I've ever seen. Have you seen anything like it in the league?
Never, Mitch. You talked about 15 years. Never in my 15 years have I seen that much movement, both on and off, and getting folks from different places, as you see right there. Just amazing, but it tells you that when you talk about the fact that everybody's being evaluated, you see right there, everybody's being evaluated.
I guess. There were essentially seven guys that thought they made the team on Saturday night, and by Sunday morning, one had been traded as Edgar Jones gets traded to Dallas for an undisclosed draft pick, and then six were waived, making room for these seven guys off waivers. Now I want to ask you this, because I tweeted it out, that this to me, when I look at each guy, kind of looking at their background a little bit, how much of this is a byproduct of a lot of eyes on the league? Dorsey's eyes, Chris Ballard's eyes, Andy Reid's eyes. What about the due diligence here?
Mitch, no question about it. They're looking at everything, and we talked about it on our broadcast this week. I mean, John Dorsey was down there on the sideline in golf shorts and a shirt, and he was sitting there like this, like you see him right there, and it was that exact same stare the whole second half. He was eyeing people. We likened it to a hawk flying around looking for mice down in the field, and all of a sudden he's going to go down and swoop some up, and he did swoop one up from Green Bay. So again, he was watching these guys. Anymore, basically, you're not just competing against the guys on your team. You're competing against, you know, 1,800 plus in the league.
Yeah, and in fact, on the radio pregame this Sunday morning, I have a chance to talk to John Dorsey. We taped it earlier in the week, and he basically said they did a redraft. They had a board set up of who they thought may not make it, and actually did a redraft. I mean, how nuts is that?
It's crazy. I'm going to tell you right now, there's probably a sign in there somewhere that says to everybody, if you want sleep, need not apply. Because I'm telling you right now, they're burning the midnight oil.
Well, the coach is also burning the midnight oil, because one thing is to claim these guys off waivers, and you said the Green Bay guy, I really like Desmond Moses. But another is to integrate them the week before you play your first game. And, I mean, how quickly can you integrate these guys?
You know what? You can get a sense of what's going on, but you can't fully get into it. But I think the thing that you can offer as a backup is you can come in and you can contribute on special teams. And I think, of course, you've got the depth. You look at McGrath. You look at the DBs that are coming in. You talk about Desmond Moses. Those guys, they provide some good, actually, in some cases, I think some good leadership, but they provide depth, which you want, and then they can come in and they can be your four core guys also. And that, you can get up to speed very, very quickly. And talking with Coach Dave Tobe, this guy, first of all, he's a champ. The guys love him. They play for him. We've seen this preseason, Mitch, what they're doing. It's fabulous. And it's not complicated. They're simply doing it better than everybody else right now.
Well, it could be a real weapon going into week one against Jacksonville, but this whole integration thing, I tweeted out too, is almost like you wanted a week of mini camp just to get these guys acclimated to the new roster. But Andy Reid talked about it and said, yep, it's up to the coaches to get these guys up to speed as fast as they can.
Yeah, well, listen, most of the guys that we added are backup players, although there's some pretty good ones there. I think John did a real nice job with that, and we appreciate the effort that the guys brought here and came in with. So they've been living here, getting all their work done and trying to catch up, some of which came from similar systems. And so there's a little bit of carryover that will take place. But again, these are more of the backup position than the starters.
Let's just put this in perspective. A week ago, we had the kickoff luncheon. I introduced 75 players on stage that day at downtown Kansas City. 29 of those guys that I introduced are not on this team. But I'm excited about the seven guys that were picked up on this team. Now, you've got a little perspective here, because let's go through the human element of, first of all, the guys that were waived, but also the guys that were picked up on waivers. You've gone through this.
It is. It's tough. In 1995, I guess 96, you know, I made the team of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I went home that night, got up Tuesday from a nap during the day, and then got called and had to go down and see Coach Cower, and he let me know that they were letting me go. And You know what, for me, that was the first time I'd ever been told that I wasn't good enough to play on a team, or at least they didn't want me. Now, it was a numbers game, but it's always a numbers game, and it's tough. Now, I went to New Orleans. There was there the next day. Of course, I snapped that week, studied sunup to sundown because I was a backup offensive lineman. So, I mean, it's possible. You can get integrated a lot, but it is tough. And that's the one thing I love about John Dorsey and Coach Reed is they're very respectful of the time that the guys put in here, because you pour out your heart and soul, and not everybody makes it. It is a numbers game, and they talk about how respectful they want to be to those guys because they did go out after it. And let's be honest, I mean, John Dorsey's been there before, having played in the league rather 5 years. So it's tough, it's interesting, but it is the NFL.
Yeah, and we're not kidding. With this conduit of respect that goes through this building now is very real, and it gets manifested when you see what happened over the past week. Now, let's transition. It's time to start the season. Yes. You know, I've been on this set doing Chiefs Live since the spring, and now it's for real. So the Rockets ready to take off, and take off in parentheses here. You always hear, and I've been spewing this stat out all week long, but these are some remarkable numbers, because look at this. In the last 13 years, this goes back to Gunther Cunningham's second year in 2000, which was your first year. So this takes you to Kendall Gammon era start. 9 of the past 13, more alarming, 6 of the last 7, and 7 of the last 9 years, Kendall, 0-2 starts. Now, I'm going to add something to this, because of the last 9 AFC champions, all 9 won on the opening weekend. We all know it's a long season, you can get beat up, but this to me is a glaring statistic. What do you see there when you see that?
Really, it tells me what we both know, which is you have to get out on a fast start, because if you don't, things start to mount, pressure starts to mount a little bit, and I think players start to press a little bit, and now your performance goes down. You've got to win those games that you've got a chance to win. The Chiefs, again, at 2-14, it's the best, most organized, most efficient 2-14 team I've ever seen. And to me, I think it's in stark contrast to what we're going to go down with Jacksonville. But it is in Jacksonville, so it's an away game. It will be hot, and you've got a lot of different players. So there's a lot of factors going on.
And the Jaguars, in their history, are the third most successful team on the opening weekend. They've won 11 of their 18 openers down through the years. A lot of those were skewed early with Tom Coughlin, Mark Brunell, and others. But still, it's a stat that gets your attention. It also gets Alex Smith's attention. This guy has been, he has been wired in on Jacksonville since the spring. Because how many times have we heard him say, yeah, it's about today, but Jacksonville, Jacksonville. I mean, Alex has been around this league. What about him and his focus on this week?
I love it, because that is what the focus has to be, is your first game. I like the fact that he talks all the time about it's a marathon, but every day is a sprint, and he's just looking to get better. He is a consummate team leader. I'm excited to see him play, because I think he's done some great things in the offseason, both physically and mentally and leadership-wise for the team. And then the fact is, everybody knows, I mean, even Blue Dog knows, that everything hasn't been put into the offense. So we're going to see it opened up wide open, and that's going to be fun to see.
Did you just go Blue Dog?
I went Funny Farm on it.
All right. So Alex Smith knows. This league, you always hear, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. Well, you know what? It's how you start and how you finish. Alex Smith knows it.
You'd love to get off to a great start, 1-0. I mean, and that's all we're talking about, and that's what the focus has been. And yeah, I mean, I think it's a big, I mean, it's 100% different than 0-1, and the feeling, and especially a team, I think, with a lot of new faces and new coaching staff and coming together, you know, to kind of reinforce everything we've been doing to get that first win would mean a lot.
Every year, you hope for the best, to start fast. That's everybody's intent going to the season. But it's a confidence level around here right now that we can start fast, and we need to start fast. When you start fast, it's man, it's you can do great things. When you don't, and I've had plenty of example of not starting fast, you just make it, you know, 10 times harder when November and December comes.
Well, that's the man of wisdom right now in the locker room. If Alex Smith is the new wisdom, that's the old wisdom. And I want to win as much as anybody, but I want to win for Derek Johnson.
Yeah, it's great. You know, he's a former teammate of mine. I've watched him grow and develop and become a leader, both in how he plays, how he practices, and really vocally as well, which was a part of the game that he had to develop, because he believes in leading by example, but he understood that he had to get vocal also. He has. I love it. He's a good dude, and you do want to win for him.
Well, I want to get what's on your mind. We did that throughout training camp. We're going to do that throughout the regular season as well. And one of the questions came in about Dexter McCluster in the return game. You had a chance to talk earlier this week with Dave Tobe. If there's one constant of the preseason, was that there was an explosive play, sometimes several, in every right. game special teams. What do you see punt return, kickoff return against Jacksonville?
You know what? What I see is this, is everybody knows what they're doing. Coach Tobe has made it very, very clear that what he's doing is not complicated. He wants to make sure everybody knows what they're doing. And then at that point, you go after the technique, you get people on people. I'm telling you right now, in terms of kickoff return folks, they're doing some good stuff. This may go back to the days of Dante Hall and how he did it. And if you're not excited, then you know you need to go back or call Mitch, and he'll give you the history of it also. It was a lot of fun. I was around it. Field position is created through special teams. I think it's very, very important from the offensive side of the ball to give the Chiefs as short a field as possible. Special teams has a chance to do that, certainly.
Specific question about Dexter McCluster. Is this cut and paste who you put in then? Because we saw Niall Davis do it. Wiley's not here anymore. We saw him do it. I mean, Demps did it. Cut and paste?
To a degree. I think it's cut and paste to get some 20 and 30-yard returns every once in a while, but there's some special people. Dexter is one of those special people because he can make something out of nothing. Now, if he does that, people are on people, and they make plays, and he goes the distance. Some guys, you know, I say this, but when you look at Dexter, when you look at Demps, and when you look at Quentin Lawrence, those guys, they can flat out run, and so they can go the distance. They showed that in the preseason. It mattered, but it didn't count. This week it matters, and it's my hope that they make it count.
People helping people is what you're saying.
Oh,
wedding crashers on you. Hey, when we come back, it's time to take a real close look at this week's opponent, the Jacksonville Jaguars. Very similar. The Chiefs have 30 new players on their 53-man roster from a year ago. The Jags have 26. We'll talk about it when we come back.
This is a seat, but let's not call it that. It's more like a drum, a pulpit, sometimes a punching bag. It's where memories are made, decibels are raised, and beverages are cradled. But let's not call it a seat, because seats were made for sitting.
Welcome back to this edition of Chiefs Live. It is on. The regular season, the Chiefs go to Jacksonville to take on the Jaguars. Two very similar teams. Both teams were 2-14 last year. Both coaching changes, GM changes, organizational overhaul changes. Just your feeling about the Jaguars, what you've seen in the offseason.
Well, you know what? I haven't followed them as closely as I should have, but what I've read and seen this week is it's a different team. Than the 2-14 team and the Chiefs. And when I say that, Mitch, everything I hear out of there is, let's just get better. We're just trying to get better. To me, they're giving themselves room or a chance to fail. They don't openly talk about wins and losses. And you know what? In the NFL, it's a performance business. You win or you lose. And that's what we're talking about here is winning. So to me, it's in stark contrast. Now, that doesn't mean that they're not going after it, and they're not focused on the same thing, because it's a home game for them. It's going to be tough for the Chiefs to go down there. Like I mentioned, heat-wise will certainly be an issue. The fans will be crazy like they always are. But, again, I go back to the fact of the Chiefs were on the front end of the curve, getting the coach, getting the GM, getting the coaching staff. They've done so much in the offseason. Now, the one thing that might be a little bit similar that you talked about going into the break was how many different players there are from last year to this.
Well, here's some preseason look at these guys. You saw Ace Sanders earlier, number 18. He's called the Tiny Terror, part of this draft class out of South Carolina. Blaine Gabbert will play. They announced he had a thumb injury during preseason, but he will play. Of course, Missouri fans remember him as being the guy that came in after Chase Daniel and had a good career. Paul Posluszny. Now, here's where I think the strength of this team is in its front seven. This is a young squad, but they've got some playmakers. But up front defensively is where I think there's a real challenge for the Chiefs this week. I'm going to give you a couple names. Senderic Marks, number 99. Number 97, Roy Miller. Jason Babbitt has been in the league for 10 years. He had 18 sacks for Andy Reid a couple years ago. And he lines up in that nine technique like a mole trying to eat your yard up or your golf course where he's off the screen. And so let me ask you about the challenges the Chiefs have in protection or getting some rhythm against what I think is a pretty good front seven, including Posluszny, who was good in Buffalo.
Well, when you look at the Chiefs' offensive line, you say, okay, Mitch, we've got two first-round picks, got two second-round picks, and a third-round pick. You love that, but the fact is they're all young. They are the youngest team in the NFL offensively as far as years of service. Pittsburgh, age-wise, is younger, but when you go of years of service, they're the youngest. That's good and that's bad. You've got a chance to grow together. You're probably pretty mobile when you're young like that, but the experience isn't there yet, and they've got to gain that experience. And what you hope they can do is gain that experience while meeting some success so they can continue to evolve. But they do have their hands full. You've got to keep number 11 upright so he can deliver the ball to the playmakers and let them make plays. 25 has to come to play. This will be the first time that we'll be able to see him in an extended role, which I'm very excited about.
And the 11 you mean is the 11 in red, white, and gold. The 11 for their kind of collection of colors they have now needs to go down in Gabbert. But let's be honest with you. John Osamoah didn't practice. He was on the DNP chart this week, at least through Wednesday and Thursday. So somebody else has to be ready. If that's a Jeff Schwartz, what do you have to do on the right side with Eric Fisher?
You know what? You could scheme for it, or you could go about your business. I'm guessing they'll probably go about their business, because you don't keep people on the team if you don't believe they can step in and play. We always talked about the fact that you're one play away from being a starter. If Osamoah isn't healthy, and I'm sure it'll be a game day decision, didn't practice yesterday, we'll see about today and the next day, but if he's a starter, he'll be expected to go in and perform at that high level. If something starts going on during the game to where they're having issues, and again, you've got two people that have not played together much on the right side, then it comes down to adjustments as an offensive coordinator, as an offensive line coach, and how you deal with things in game time adjustments. I think that is so very big.
Schwartz has started 19 games in his career. This is his fifth year in the league. Now, let's talk about Jacksonville secondary a little bit. Then I'm going to pop the screen back up because there's one thing we need to talk about. They're young in the secondary. They have a good young corner, a kid named Dwayne Gratz, who is a second-round pick out of UConn. Jonathan Cyprian is a guy that runs downhill and plays at strong safety. He's something to be dealt with. Alan Ball has been around the league for a while. But let's bring this back up, because there's a couple guys that jump off the page. One is Maurice Jones-Drew, one of my favorite players in this league for a long time, because he's tough, productive, catches it, runs it, runs downhill, good zone read guy, or a good zone runner. What about Jones-Drew and being gap integrity with him?
I'm going to tell you right now, Jones-Drew, of course, had injuries last year, Mitch, but I believe the year before might have been the league's leading rusher. So
right.
He can do it, but is his health there? We'll soon see. Somebody like him, though, is very tough to deal with from a defensive side because he's very diminutive, hard to see sometimes, but behind big offensive linemen. He's built, he's got a big lower body. I liken him to a bowling ball. There's just nowhere to knock him off his feet because he just continues to roll and go. So that's an issue. He's fast. You could make the argument that with not playing as much last year, he's got a fresh set of legs. But again, he's got to be healthy. He's somebody that they have to account for at all times because he can be a game breaker.
Pop the screen back up, guys and gals, because I want to show you another name that you do not know about but should. and it's Cecil Shorts III. This guy played Division III football at Mount Union College. That's Len Dawson's hometown of Alliance, Ohio, the Purple Raiders, who own Division III and have for a generation. But this guy was second in the NFL last year to Vincent Jackson of Tampa Bay in yards per catch. Had touchdowns of 80, 67, 59, and 42. The guy can flat scoot. What about trying to keep a guy like that in front of you?
Well, he's a playmaker. That's obvious. You would hope that they would get into him. They would jam him off the line of scrimmage. Don't give him a chance to use that top-end speed that he's obviously has. That being said, he's going to make some plays. He's a good player. People in this league do make plays. And when they do, the fact is you can't let them go for big 20-plus plays. You've got to get them down and give the defense a chance to line up and do it again. And we saw that, Mitch, a couple different times in preseason where the defense had a big play against them, and then they managed to get somebody down, and now they go three and out after that. It's something that I thought was very astute by defensive coordinator Bob Sutton, finding a positive in the negative. Did you want the cutback run for 50 yards in the first play of one of the preseason games? No. But they regathered, they regrouped. That's what you've got to do. You've got to understand it's the biggest cliche, but it is a 60-minute game. You've got to give your guys a chance to line up and do it again.
And the other thing we'll do here before we kind of get a look at the Chiefs and some of the highlights here, would be the fact that they've got Denard Robinson. Now, if you follow Big Ten football in Michigan, this guy is a little bit like the Kane Coulter kid at Northwestern. He can line up at receiver, running back, and quarterback. The Chiefs had to prepare, and I'm going to ask you the complexity of preparation for him, because this guy is a quarterback
right,
playing in the Wildcat. He can also play running back. He runs the ball very well, and he can play receiver. Now, what does that do to Bob Sutton and his defense?
It's tough because you create matchup, I'm not going to say nightmares, but issues that you've got to be ready for, because, again, if he can line up in one of three positions, that is completely different in terms of what personnel you might want to be sending out there. Certainly as a QB, if he happened to line up a QB, the Wildcat obviously is an option, but he can throw the ball, and I would think that you would have to spy him with the type of speed that he has as well. So he really, really, he's a wild card in the equation. He's something that you really have to deal with. And if you're an offensive coordinator on their side of the ball, you're having fun with him most likely.
Derek Johnson told me yesterday, kept using the word on point. The defense has to be on point this whole game. All right, Chiefs to watch, storylines to watch. You already talked about Alex Smith. I want to see the defensive line. You and I were both encouraged in the preseason about the defensive line and what they can do to possibly dominate the line of scrimmage. What do you think about that?
You know what, Dontari Poe, Mitch, we've talked about him throughout the preseason. He's done a great job. He's flowing laterally along the line of scrimmage, making plays like a linebacker, but he's 6'3", 340. Tyson Jackson's done a good job. DeVito's there all the time, knows what's going on, provides leadership, is that workman's type mentality. May not make a lot of plays, but he's going to help other people make a lot of plays. What I'm really curious about, though, with the defensive line is, are they going to put some pressure in the pass game, and can they do that? Because you know you're going to get it from the outside from 91 and 50, but if you can get the inside guys to press the pocket offensively on the pass, I think that'll make a big difference, because we talked about it a little bit earlier in terms of their receivers. Well, I think the strength of our defense is our secondary, and if the secondary sees the ball coming out a little bit quicker because the defense is making some issues pass rush-wise, I think that will spell good things for the Chiefs on Sunday.
The Jaguars and the Chiefs have been in the same sentence really since December the 31st, both going 2-14. Both had 1-2 in the pick of the draft. Chiefs take Eric Fisher, Jags take Luke Jokel. So they've been kind of connected here now throughout the entire offseason, and they're connected to open the year. But I'm going to get a final comment from you before we close, because you mentioned that the two teams maybe a little bit of different approach. One difference would be the Chiefs, for lack of a better term, and I'm going investment on you here, went to a high-cap stock. They went invested in an Andy Reid, mm-hmm, and a guy that's had 130 career wins and 10 playoff wins. They invested big time in a trade with Alex Smith. The Jaguars kept Gabbert. They got Chad Henne. They can do some Wildcat stuff. But the Chiefs said, we're going to go out and get Alex Smith. The Jags said, we'll stay with what we've got. The Chiefs get Andy Reid. The Jags go with Gus Bradley, respected as a defensive coordinator in Seattle, but very different here. What about the investment approach, I guess, of the two teams?
Well, I think it is interesting you bring that up. Instant respect with Coach Andy Reid and what he's done, and that goes without saying. I think You hit on a topic that I think is interesting in terms of going out, signing some new players, and understanding you want to make a change as opposed to keeping the guys that Jacksonville did. To me, it's going to a golf course and deciding to test a driver for 18 holes, and you'll deal with it the next round. You know, Jacksonville, I think they're looking at everything they have, and to me, they've almost openly said to a degree, this is an evaluation year, and we're going to see what we have, and then we're going to start building for it, whereas I think the Chiefs took a little bit different approach, certainly the one I like, which is went out, got the folks that they felt could upgrade the team, and you saw that not only through the preseason and in it to training camp, but then the 53-man cut and what they did after that. We detailed that earlier on. So two different approaches. Certainly, I like the Chiefs' approach. I think it's more conducive to what's going on and how the Chiefs want to run things. I'm going to tell you, it's a good energy. I can't speak for what's going on in Jacksonville because I'm not inside that organization, No. But I know what's going on here, and it's a good, tight, clean energy.
Says everything about Clark Hunt and the Hunt family and the investment that they made
about it.
In the offseason for sure. Well, here we go. This is it. Let's do this. It's the Chiefs and the Jaguars to open up. Again, the Chiefs trying to get off to a good start, something that if they win this game, and I don't care if they win at 9-6, or 97-67, it would be historic to get on that plane and come home at 1-0 when you look at the last 13 years. He's Kendall Gammon. He's the Snapper. I'm Mitch Holter's voice of the Chiefs, and thank you for joining us on this edition of Chiefs Live.